Well, good morning and welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. We are really glad that you have tuned in with us today. And we're looking forward to a good conversation. I'm Luke, and I'm here with Josh and with Adam. We'll start like we do every week and just do a quick check-in and an update. How is your week going? How has it been? What's a highlight? Or if you've got a low light that you want to complain about, I guess we can listen to that too.
Yeah, no, we were just, before we hit record, I was telling you guys that I have a grand dog now.
Grand
so
dog.
That's kind of fun. So talk about a new stage.
You got a new dog, and it's just this adjective to describe it. That dog is so grand.
Yeah, no. AJ, just kidding, yeah. AJ got a puppy yesterday. He was like, he's been asking for months. He's like, can I get a cat? I was like, no. He's like, why not? It's like, because we're Christians.
Yeah, and right. You know, like, haven't you heard me preach ever in the last 20 years?
The next closest thing to a cat, which is a terrier.
No. And so yesterday, he's like, so I can't get a cat.
Yorkie.
He's like, so I shouldn't get a cat, right? And I was like, no, not while you live in my house. Now, remember, he's 21 years old.
Sure, so, right, yeah.
It's like, you can do whatever you want except for get a cat. And he's like, well, what if I got a puppy? It's like, well, you're going to have to ask your mom. And you know what she thinks, and she's like, "Well, you're gonna have to ask your dad."
So, back and forth.
It's like, "Well, hey, I'm not taking care of it. I'm not paying for anything."
You're gonna try to find a book like, you know, how to raise your grand pup or something like that.
Yeah. We're not ready to be grandparents yet by any stretch of the imagination. this is an easy way in.
Love it. That's fun. Well, congratulations to AJ. And to Adam and Jennifer, an additional animal in the house,
a member of the household.
Yes. Do you have like a grand pup, like a grandpa dog, a dog grandpa?
Dog
grandpa cup or something like that.
No.
All right. Sticker for the back of your
Target
car.
Target and TJ Maxx have tons of that. So go get yourself a dog grandpa mug or something.
Yeah.
Josh, what about you, man? How's your week been?
The week has been, it's a little unusual of a week. Sasha was out of town Monday, Tuesday, and most of Wednesday on a field trip for school.
That's fun.
Yeah, so they went to Huntsville, Alabama, went to the Space Museum. They literally took a hike, wore the students out before that night, and they all like went to bed without even being asked. So that was a smart move. For her?
With middle schoolers,
yeah. They were so tired.
Wow.
They just went to bed, fell asleep during the movie even and all that. So props to her for that.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I've never seen that ever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they took a long hike and then anyway, just had a good time, but she was so tired yesterday getting back. So we went to bed early and
very good.
And now as we record, there's still lots more to do this weekend with a CLC event tonight, mm-hmm. wedding this weekend, officiating, and then Dominic has soccer on Saturday, and it's a very full week, and so it's not usual. So I'm excited for Monday the 27th to come when you listen to this.
Good. Yes. Yeah. As Josh is a very happy man, as you are listening in this moment right now. It's been an enjoyable couple of days for me and my little brother, Wade, who is massively taller than I am.
Not saying a lot.
Got in yesterday, and so we've been hanging out. We're going to try to get in a bunch of disc golf and enjoy each other. He actually has come into town for the wedding that you are officiating, and so that'll be fun coming up this weekend. But looking forward to all of that. Now, Josh, we know because you preached – as we're listening, we preached yesterday about the story in Mark chapter 5, or one of the stories in Mark chapter 5, and 12 years was a theme, and you talked about how it was a long time ago. You shared a little bit about your season of life 12 years ago. Feel free to add some more. Here's just kind of the question for us to think through. What season of life were you in 12 years ago? What are maybe some of the biggest changes from then to now that have happened?
Yeah, well, so 12 years ago, I was a dinker, so that means double income, no kids.
Okay, there you go. I had no idea.
You ever heard that?
No
clue what that means.
Yeah, so before kids, actually 12 years ago, I was a bachelor, and then later this year, 12 years ago, I got married in September of 2011. And so then we were dinkers there for a little while.
I don't think I like the word. I don't think I like it.
I'll stop saying it. Okay. Anyway, we got married 12 years ago. So it's just wild to kind of think 12 years ago, there's no kids. Now three of them are in grade school. And so just going full on from, you know, if after dinner one night, you're like, hey, you want to go get ice cream? Hey, you want to drive to the Mall of Georgia? Hey, you want to, yeah, let's go. And now it's like, how are we helping the kids do homework? And what's the meal plan for the rest of the week? Because we have that in store. And so a lot's changed. Yeah. 12 years is a long time.
It's good.
Interesting. Am I a dinker? No, I don't even,
I don't know.
He just described basically every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday evening in my house. It's like, what do you want to do tonight?
Yeah, I think that it's the pre-kids and post-kids.
But you're still paying for some of your kids' stuff.
Absolutely. So absolutely.
I think that double income is there, but yeah.
Well, in some cases, I have triple, quadruple income.
Ooh. Here we go. Nice.
Yeah. It's not quadruple, though. So, yeah, 12 years ago, let me see, I would have been... I'm still a father of two, still married. We'd been married for, what year is it? What year would that have been 12 years ago?
2011.
So I've been married for 11 years at that point. And so dad of two, trying to think, 2011, it's weird. You know, you get to that period of time because like we were looking for pictures, you know, for the sermon to help you out. I don't know what ended up being shown or not, but.
It's appropriate. Don't worry.
Yeah, there are. As far as like that entire year, 2011, I think we had like three family pictures or something like that.
Okay.
Or like there was like one picture with Jennifer and I, maybe one or two pictures where Jennifer and I were in the same picture together.
Oh, wow.
So lots of, you know, other pictures and those things. But we were talking about it and, you know, cell phone technology was still fairly young.
Yeah.
And the cameras were not very good.
The iPhone was only 4 years old.
And the camera was okay, but it wasn't fantastic by any stretch of the imagination. And so, not a lot of
high quality photos
to pull from there.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Golly, 12 years ago, 2011, I would have been. I guess that makes me 15. So, high school student, and you could. Anything that comes to your mind whenever you think of Luke as a high school student, you're probably right. That's
well,
where it was.
Well, the picture, you were pretty serious about your soccer uniform.
Oh, my
gosh.
You
were putting on your game face.
I was so excited about that new warm-up, old soccer ball in the kitchen of my house in front of the garage entrance door.
Hey, I'm not sure if you noticed, but there was a Chiefs mug in the background of that picture.
Was there? I did not know. Okay, there you go. And that would have either been... mine or my dad's.
I guess mug. Yeah. It's really one of those cold mugs. Like it's a big cup, like you get at Lambert's.
It's
not a coffee mug.
Yeah, that was
a Stein.
No, it's one of those plastic ones.
Oh, okay.
Not a ceramic or glass or anything. Yeah. A plastic kind of insulated one you could take outside, work in the yard all day.
Yeah,
that's what my mom used to do at least.
So for me, like 12 years, because it's probably between the three of us the most. This might not be the right word, but the most dramatic change, because for me, 15 years old, since then, I've gone to college, graduated college,
started
full-time ministry, become married, all that sort of stuff.
It's really a transfer into adulthood.
Correct. Yeah. So for me, that's like a big one. So 12 years can feel like a long time ago, because it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Here's just some more fun stuff to talk through before we get into our stuff. We're going to talk in a little bit about a Markin sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
But first, let's talk about sandwich. What's the best sandwich that you ever remember tasting? What have you had that you've really liked?
It's just a sandwich.
Oh, I was afraid you were going to say that. Sandwiches are so good, man.
That's whatever.
Sandwiches are good.
You got to craft it well. Yeah. Firehouse, if you're looking for subs, is always my favorite.
Okay, so your go-to sub restaurant's Firehouse.
Yep.
Okay. If you never go get a sub like a Firehouse, Jersey Mike's.
No.
Man.
Now we did go to Jersey Mike's the other day. Sasha and I did, and it was really nice.
It's good. Yeah.
Really nice.
Jersey Mike's
it's
good.
More colder, and it's not steamed.
Yeah.
And
it's $50 for two sandwiches.
It's so good. So
it's
much
delicious.
So much money.
It's
delicious.
I'd rather go get a steak.
So it is not this way anymore, but 12 years ago when I was 15, Subway was the best. Mm. Like, I loved Subway so much.
You go a lot has changed, hasn't it?
Go get a meatball sub, go get an oven-roasted chicken. But I had a $10 gift card to Subway. So I went in there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, first of all, it was $10 gift card. There's none of that $5 foot-long thing going on anymore. That $10 gift card barely got me my sandwich, mm-hmm. and that's it.
Yeah.
And it was... Yeah, it was not very good. But Firehouse is very good. Jersey Mike's is very good.
I mean, Subway is just if you want to go get a sandwich that smells like bleach.
I don't know that I ever got the bleach smell from Subway.
That's probably you've been
or
there.
If you want to, if you want to go eat a sandwich that's mostly bread, and not, then you go to Subway. Yeah.
What about like Adam? So you say sandwich, but what about something like a Philly cheesesteak or something
or
like
Cuban,
that?
A Cuban? Yeah, sandwich.
I mean those are
sandwiches.
Yeah. But I'm not going anywhere to just get one of those.
Okay.
So if I happen to be at a place that it's just like, okay, I want something lighter, then maybe I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
But very rarely am I just going, you know what I really want is a sandwich.
Fred's Meat and Bread, the Philly cheesesteak is the best.
Is it?
Ever.
Yeah. So,
yeah, but a Philly cheesesteak to me, I know it's technically a sandwich, but that's not a sandwich.
Why not?
Because there's way the ratio of meat to bread is like so high, it's just so much better.
Well, when I make sandwiches at home, the ratio of meat to bread is pretty high too.
It's out two pieces of bread and an entire package of meat.
Here's a pro tip for you sandwich makers at home. The massive mistake that's made whenever sandwiches are made in the home is that you take your deli meat and you just lay it flat on the bread. Man, you got to fold those things in half like the actual deli. It makes your sandwich taste better, I promise.
Yeah, I don't mind a sandwich at home, but it's like if I'm going out, I am not getting a sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah, unless we're going to call a hot dog or a hamburger a sandwich. And
well, so
that's
so
where he was going next.
is a hot dog a sandwich?
Technically, no. Yes.
Technically, yes, but
in spirit, no.
In spirit, no. You say no.
No.
A hamburger or like a chicken sandwich or something like that?
Now, a chicken sandwich is a sandwich because it's called a chicken sandwich.
See, but then how can you justify calling a chicken sandwich a sandwich but not a burger a sandwich?
Because a burger is not called a sandwich.
But the only difference
chicken
is
burger?
The type of meat.
Yeah, but it's in the name.
Oh, man.
So you just got to get down to it like
is a taco a sandwich?
Let's just call it a cow sandwich.
is ravioli a sandwich?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to start calling hamburgers, beef sandwiches.
Is
ravioli is tiny hot pockets.
Yeah, tiny hot pockets. Is Mark chapter 5 a sandwich?
Yeah.
It is.
Okay, yeah. So there's no debate there.
Hey, Luke, did you know that in 2011 your favorite TV show came out?
What's that?
New Girl.
Oh, my
Kim,
goodness.
or I thought you were going really Kim Possible, man. The one he had a crush on.
So, yeah, well, that was a middle school crush. By high school, I had moved on to bigger and better things. Man, 2011, New Girl. It's not that I don't like New Girl. It's that I don't like watching New Girl over and over and over and over and over again. That's the same problem with any of those
TV
shows.
We are definitely not recommending anybody sit out there and watch New Girl.
Yeah, no. It's the same with all of those shows. Like, it's great once and then... You know, occasionally after that, but you watch it over and over and
maybe,
over.
Maybe this one. Were you a big fan of the show Jesse?
No, I was not.
Okay, that came out in 2011, too.
2011. That's a Disney show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my little brother Scott was a fan
Probably.
Of Jesse. I was a fan of Sweet Life of Zack and Cody.
Okay.
Which I think is mm-hmm. Jesse was a spinoff from that.
I'm sure. Yes, you are correct.
Yeah. So, or that was a spinoff from Sweet Life on Deck.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. Last Man Standing came out in 2011.
Last Man Standing.
Did it really?
I love that show.
That was a fantastic fun show. Yeah. I remember really liking that one.
Golly, 2011 feels like, in some ways, it feels a long time ago, and in some ways, it doesn't feel like it was that long.
Person
ago.
Of Interest. Did you ever watch Person of Interest?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my goodness. That's good.
That was my name in high school.
Jim Caviezel. Yeah, Person of Interest. Yeah.
So, when did all the 24s start coming out?
I
was earlier than
really,
that.
Really disappointed. It started out in like 2001.
One?
So, yeah.
Ooh.
So it was done. It was already done by 2010. 2010 was the last season of that.
Oh, wow.
So okay. 13 years ago was the last episode of 24.
Yeah. Yep.
Crazy.
Now, Live Another Day, the miniseries, came out in 2014.
Never heard of it.
That was good. It was only like a 3 or 4 episode thing.
Nope.
It was awesome.
Yep. There we go. That was fun. I'm glad you glad you looked up all of the shows that came out in 2011.
Oh man, we could go on that all day.
There you go. Okay, so let's jump into our sermon, or I guess Josh's sermon. Josh, give us a quick recap of what you talked about yesterday, and then we'll kind of start adding some commentary to it.
Yeah, it was really a continuation from 2 weeks ago. And 3 weeks ago, week one and week two, and then now week four, and then next week five will all be the same narrative, end of Mark 4 through the end of Mark 5. And this particular portion is the Markan sandwich. So he starts out with the approach of Jairus to Jesus, who has a dying daughter, but then he stops because another person comes up to Jesus, the woman with an issue of blood who's been bleeding for 12 years, and kind of talks about that in the middle of the Jairus story. And then next week, Adam will close out this chapter in 4 weeks out of the six of this series, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of the best kind of narratives. We've talked about that before, and Mark's doing so many cool things. So we just for yesterday, you know, focused on the woman and the fear that she must have been having because of just the stigma that was on her, the stereotypes that were on her, what she would do to technically make people unclean if they touched her, all this kind of stuff. The fear to push through the crowd and get to Jesus was really rewarded in a very powerful way. The only person in all of Scripture that Jesus calls daughter, and a really kind of tender moment, a really powerful moment for just thinking about our lives and what can happen when we face some fears and step out in faith to get to Jesus. Because he rewards it, and faith was rewarded in a really cool and powerful way. So that's it.
Yeah. Adam, what are your kind of thoughts? What was particularly helpful or encouraging as you listened and have reflected on since yesterday?
Yeah, I think this is one of my favorite. I feel like we say this all the time, but it is one of my favorite encounters, you know, with Jesus. And I love the way that Mark tells the story, love the way Matthew tells the story, love the way Luke tells mm-hmm. the story as well. And I think that it, for me, it's just the dogged pursuit and I'm not going to be kept away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, that's just the thing there. It's just like, golly, that's how I want my life to be characterized. And so as I think of her, that, you know, her taking the risk and her pushing through, you know, all the obstacles and those things just so she could get to Jesus, that's just an incredible testimony.
Yeah, I love that. I think this is actually, I love this story so much that I actually chose Mark chapter 5, the three narratives in Mark mm-hmm. chapter 5, and it was some context, Mark chapter 4. I've mm-hmm. chose that as the big paper that I wrote in my Mark class in college. And mm-hmm. there's just something really, really cool about the way that Jesus takes a massive public moment and makes it very intimate and private for this woman who is expressing her faith in him. And it's just a really, really cool thing. So, for those who, didn't listen, to the sermon yesterday or weren't here on Sunday, here's kind of the recap of the story, and a little bit more of a narrative detail. Jesus has finished with the demoniac and the Gerasenes, and he gets in the boat again, and the disciples are probably tired of that. But they get in the boat, they go across the lake to the other side and are immediately met by large crowds. One person approaches him, and Josh had just mentioned this, is Jairus, who's got a daughter who is, catch this, 12 years old,
mm-hmm.
Who is sick and dying, and Jesus starts following Jairus to go heal. He gets stopped, and as the crowds are around him, he gets stopped by this woman with a bleeding issue, who believes that if she just touches the garment of Jesus' robe, will be healed. Sure enough, that's what happens. I think one of the interesting things is the text always points out she had touched the garment, and then Jesus knew that power had come out from him,
mm-hmm.
and then she was healed. And then she comes forward, and Jesus looks at her, says, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." So really, really cool story. I'd encourage you guys to go read it. So think through the story, and maybe even in context with Mark chapter 4, calming of the storm, Mark chapter 5, what we've seen already with the Gerasene demoniac. What are some other details that would be fun to kind of talk through that you guys are noticing and picking up on?
Yeah, Josh, what hit the cutting room floor?
Well, we referenced this before, I think, kind of talking about it, but the theme of things falling down, the storm literally sat down and shut up, and then Jairus was at the feet of Jesus, the demoniac was at the feet of Jesus, the woman was at the feet of Jesus, and that's a word for worship. In this story, I didn't really talk about this because, you know, next week, Adam, you're preaching about Jairus, but there is quite a cool just comparison and contrast between him and the woman. Like, everything is different. He's a man, she is a woman. He has money, she doesn't have any money left. He's clean, she's unclean. He's on the in crowd, she's on the out crowd. Like, every single thing you could do, you could find, they're different except their pursuit of Jesus. And so it's cool to talk about Jesus' response to those who search after him. That's really what matters. It's not, you know, your status, your clout, your anything else. It's how are you coming after him? I also think I kind of referenced this yesterday. Just she had heard about Jesus, the text says, and so didn't go into too much detail into this. But it is kind of fun to conjecture: how did she hear?
Yeah,
who told her? Was it rumor? Was it a specific conversation? If, you know, we've said before, it's not a chosen podcast. The chosen depicts it a certain way, which could be possible, I guess.
But the way the chosen does this story is fantastic. Oh, I can't remember which episode
really
that
powerful,
is.
Yeah. Season three,
but I can't remember what episode it was.
It's toward the middle.
Is it?
I think.
Yeah. Whenever you binge it and you watch it all at the same time, it all just kind of starts.
But I do think that's interesting to think about. So how did she hear? You know? So yeah, that's just a few things, I guess.
Well, I mean, evidently, you would have had to been living under a rock if you were in that region and you hadn't heard about Jesus.
Yeah, remind me, where are they exactly, right?
Capernaum.
Capernaum, okay.
Right. So, and everywhere, like everywhere Jesus goes, there are crowds because of what he has been doing, right? And so,
specifically in Capernaum, he has already healed the centurion's son, I believe.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and that's where we think that they probably had their base of ministry set up because he heals Peter's mother-in-law. And then we think that they did a lot of kind of like base ministry out of that house and stuff like that. So,
according to the chosen, that's what happened.
Correct. Yeah. And so there's a lot of familiarity in that region right there in Capernaum and in the northern parts of Galilee about Jesus. And so everywhere he goes, I mean, crowds are just around. Right. And so, here's just kind of the question that follows off. So she's heard about Jesus. We don't know how, but it's kind of fun to imagine. How do you think that she knew touching his garment would make her well? Like she's like, I don't necessarily need to be, you know, like to interact with him. I don't necessarily need for him to perform some sort of crazy miracle. I just need to touch the garment and I'll be healed. How do you think she gets to that thought?
I guess there's a couple different ways. I mean, one, maybe it's just kind of a mixture of Hellenistic kind of culture, like superstition.
Sure.
But there's also, I guess, some history in the Old Testament. And Adam, you're sharing this with me. Just, I guess, comes from Malachi 4:2, healing in his wings. And so you talk about some of the actual just garments, the tzitzit, I think is how you say that, you know, on the prayer shawls and things like that that are kind of like wings. And they interpreted the like a Messiah character, those were his wings. And if you could touch the wings, there was healing in the wings. And so, you know, maybe she knows that story. Maybe she doesn't. I mean, we don't actually know that. It's maybe you could confidently conjecture, maybe. Like,
sure.
Yeah. If she's been searching for 12 years, it wouldn't be outside logical conjecture to say, hey, she's probably heard of this tradition as well.
Yeah. And she's probably tried other things that are outside of the box too, right? Because Go ahead.
It's just like with that. So like in Numbers 15, whenever it's describing the tzitzit and the garment that they're supposed to wear, the word that is used in Numbers 15:38 is the same word as Malachi 4:2 for wings.
Okay.
And so there is a connection there, even in the Old Testament, to where there's this like, oh my goodness, when the Messiah guy shows up, there will be healing in his wings. There'll be healing in his tzitzit. And so I think that's a super logical conclusion to draw, that this woman who is broke, she's spent everything, she's tried every avenue possible to find relief and healing. Of course she knows that the Messiah is going to have healing in his wings.
Sure.
This is the guy. I mean, yeah. Look at all the things that are going on. So if I can just grab the corner of his garment,
yeah,
I'll be healed.
I love that. I love that connection back to the Old Testament. I mean, and you get to the point where it's impossible for us to like really put ourselves in the shoes of this woman suffering for 12 years. And mm-hmm. Josh, you went into some further details and talked about how the, we already said 12 years is a really long time, but also she had already spent everything that she had. Mm-hmm. And the condition had actually not improved, but mm-hmm. had gotten worse. And so those are some of the reasons, but what are some other reasons or thoughts as to why, man, this just prolonged season of suffering would have been really, really difficult for this woman in this day and age?
When you think about the life expectancy and, some people lived longer, of course, but when you start taking averages, men didn't live much above 30, and neither did women on average, when you start averaging everything out. So this is a third of her entire life expectancy, perhaps, mm-hmm. and, over like half of her adult life. And so it's like all she's known. I mean, can you imagine? Just that's crazy. And the fact that only wealthy people went to the doctor. So if she's already spent all she had, she probably was in a different social class at one point.
Mm-hmm. And now she's not.
And now she's not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think the word you used earlier, just comparing Jairus to her, clean versus unclean, is always one that sticks out to me. Mm-hmm. This woman, because of what she was dealing with, would have been, according to the Levitical Old Testament law, untouchable, to worship. She wasn't
untouchable.
So you get to this point to where it's like, okay, well, she needs to make money, but she can't have a job because, she can't be around people like mm-hmm. that. She needs to be in the presence of God, but she can't go to synagogue because she's ceremonially unclean. And so there's just that extra stigma attached there because of that issue as well. And so, man, to think about like 12 years without being able to be around people, that's isolating. And
everybody knows.
And everybody knows.
It's not a secret at all.
And so it just makes the healing that much more significant because we talked about it last week in John chapter 9. Not only mm-hmm. did the blind man receive healing from his blindness, but from his helplessness too.
Right.
And so this woman is receiving, Josh, we talked about it like a spiritual healing, but a physical healing, but then also an emotional communal healing too. Now she's going to be able to mm-hmm. be in community again, go to synagogue, potentially interact with people, get a job. And I just think that the full restoration of this story is just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
As we kind of think about some of those other details as to why the suffering was just really, really difficult for
her. It's physical, it's spiritual, it's social. It's all the things.
Yeah. Josh, I love the connection that you made with the crowd. This is one of the stories that I always chuckle at whenever, Jesus asked, who touched me?
Mm-hmm.
And the disciples are like, oh, come on, man. Like,
yeah,
everybody's touching you. It's a crowd. And so you pointed out something that was just fun. Like we've all maybe been to a game, like a UGA game or mm-hmm. for me, like a Chiefs game or a Spurs game. And then as soon as everybody is trying to leave the same spot at once, you touch people. Mm-hmm. You don't know who, you don't know when, you don't know how, but you touch people. Right. And so we've all been there. But for Jesus specifically, he knows that something is up. And to me, the power of Jesus on display here is really just as significant as the previous two miracles from the same day. It doesn't seem as like extravagant because in one, Jesus is speaking, and another, Jesus is casting, and in this one, he's just there. But the fact that he's just there kind of proves the power on display even more. So talk to us a little bit about how you think Jesus's power is being displayed here. Maybe in connection to the other two miracles we've seen so far.
It's all encompassing over everything. And whatever you can think of. I mean, it started with the storm, so the natural elements. Then it went to the demons, the supernatural elements. And then it came back to another natural element, but a different kind, one of the body, a disease that had been incurable for 12 years, for a lifetime, literally, you know. And then it just was cured instantly, just like the storm, just like the demons. And then the next one, even death, which is, I don't know which one's most impressive, honestly.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at all of me like, yeah, they're all good.
That's like our favorite story. What I love Mark is doing. We're not putting these miracles up together and being like, all right, which is the coolest or the mm-hmm. most important or the most significant. He's really pointing it all, and he's trying to get to one particular point. And it's like, Jesus has power over everything. And mm-hmm. so take a look at the power over the sea, and take a look at the power over the spiritual realm, and take a look at the mm-hmm. power over the physical somethings, and take a look at the power over even death itself. And so just really, really cool to see Jesus's power on display here. And yeah, I don't know. It's just a really, really cool narrative of scripture. Are you hearing that?
I don't think so. I think we're clear.
We're clear.
But if you do hear a lawnmower in the background, it's because our good friend is cutting the grass.
Yeah.
Outside the, I mean, it's got to be cut.
Got to be done.
That time of year, man.
Fresh grass Sunday.
It's great.
That's right.
So
got to mow that dead Bermuda. I don't know if it's that side's dead right now, but it's that time.
My lawn has weeds, so I have live weeds.
Still got to cut those.
Yeah, you do.
Turn green. Yeah. Turn green.
Yep. Cool. All right, so let's move on now to Josh, what you talked about in regards to faith. I love what you did with the application. Just faith is a risk. I think you see that clear as day in this story. But talk to us a little bit about how that is. Like, faith is a risk. How so?
Anytime you, I mean, really do anything, right? It's a risk. So
sure.
You join, I don't know, you try out for a team. That's a risk. You get married. There is, I mean, you're promising, and so is she. But it's there's still a risk. Anything worthwhile, I think, is a risk.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And
you eat a sandwich, it's a risk.
At Subway, for sure.
Yeah, you'll be hungry again in 30 minutes. Yep.
So, I mean, why should it surprise us that it's different with faith? But I think, I mean, there was some old book written a while ago called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, I think.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the idea is, you know, you got to put your faith in something. And if you're going to risk it, look at Jesus, the one who has proven himself already. So, like, we even have a better eyes to see than this woman did, because she hadn't seen the full extent of his love, which was the cross. And so
sure.
when we're talking about ourselves, the risk, if you want to call it that, faith is a risk, but we can look back on something that's pretty powerfully proven that we can trust in. So,
yeah, I think any time that we are going to follow Jesus, there's going to be a risk. Everything does accompany a risk. I was thinking about, you know, whenever you ask the pretty girl out to prom or yep. homecoming or just for the first date, it's a risk. And, you know, she could say yes, she could
never
say no.
Really paid off as a reward for me in high school 12 years ago.
Yeah, 12 years ago. But I think that, you know, sometimes, like, one of my favorite books is an old John Ortberg book. You know, if you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat.
Yeah.
And there's always a risk that accompanies that. You know, I think of Peter, it's a different story, but Peter took a huge risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he stepped out onto water, and spoiler alert is that most people can't do that. They can't stand on water
yep.
if it's wet. And but he took that risk. And, like, I even think in the previous part of this story, with the disciples just getting in the boat and let's just go to the other side. There's a risk because you just don't know. I think one of the things that we have to remember, you know, about Jesus is, you know, going back to C.S. Lewis and, not Mere Christianity, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Okay.
Whenever it's talking about Aslan, the lion, and I think it's Mr. and Mrs. Beaver.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kids are asking about Aslan. Is he safe? And they're like, no, he's not safe. But he's good.
He's good.
And following Jesus isn't a safe thing to do. It's a risky thing to do, but it's the best thing that you can do. And so it's worth the risk. And so, I think that's just one of the things there, because whenever we think about what Jesus is calling us to do and where he's asking us to go, it's like, yeah, it's risky, but it's the right thing to do always.
Well, even in this story, I didn't go into it because it's the Jairus story, mm-hmm. and that's more probably next week. But he took a risk.
How hard was that for you not to step on the toes of Adam coming up next week with that story?
Well, I even took some more stuff out because
I threatened him in my notes.
Yeah, he's like, "Don't you dare!"
You're not even allowed to say the word Jairus.
Yeah, this man, I don't know his name. Adam, I'll tell you next week. No. It is interesting to think about. Jesus had just been on this side of the lake, like 2 days ago.
Yep.
So something happened pretty quickly where, you know, the likelihood is maybe his daughter had an illness and it took a sudden turn for the worse. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Or something could, like a tragedy could have struck really fast. And so all of a sudden something changed, because before he wasn't pursuing Jesus because it was risky. He was a leader of the synagogue. And, you know, the crowds that he ran in probably wouldn't have wanted to associate with Jesus and attract undue attention from the Jewish leaders, someone like a Herod, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he hasn't approached Jesus so far, but then he got to the point in his life where he said, I can't do anything else. I have to go to Jesus, because it's the risk of not going to Jesus is actually worse. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I think about that, you know, what you just said there, and I know this might be moving into next week a little bit, but...
That's okay. It's your stuff.
It is my stuff that I'm stealing.
On. Yeah.
But, you know, you've heard it said that nobody changes until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, is it's like for Jairus, he didn't want to step out in faith because it was too risky. But then it got to this place where it was too risky to not step out in faith.
Yeah.
And so, boom, I'm gonna step in right here. And I think that's just an interesting observation you're making there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you get to the point, and this is where the conversation goes to where we've said a lot of these things before, but the woman for 12 years is suffering in despair because of what's going on. Jairus, watching his daughter, suffering in despair because of what's going on. But it is ultimately those two things that lead them to placing their faith in Jesus and saying, maybe this guy can do something here. And you know, we think about our stories, and sometimes it's no different, right? Like some of the, you know, I'm not saying that I've got a dead daughter or a daughter who's about to die, but sometimes the difficult seasons in our life can actually strengthen and grow us to the point to where it's like, oh yeah, not placing my faith in Jesus doesn't make sense.
Well, and even on another, I think, sliver of this is, what's the worst that's going to happen?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. What do you think about that with the woman?
Exactly. What's the worst thing that's going to happen?
She had already lost it all.
Yeah. It's like, oh, so she's going to be humiliated because she tried to reach out and touch someone. Oh, she's going to be ostracized. Oh, she's going to be pushed to the side. Oh, you know, it's like... Mm-hmm. She's already got all those things going on. Mm-hmm. She's experienced every single one of those things. What's the worst that's going to happen by just reaching out and saying, hey, I really believe this could be the thing. I'm going for it. I got nothing to lose here.
And for us too, because it's like we've reached out and we've come up short. So what do you have to lose to reach to Jesus instead, right?
Yeah.
Is that where you're going with it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the worst thing to happen for Jairus? It's like, oh, my daughter's going to be dead. It's already the worst case. Mm-hmm. And so how could it, I mean, and I think sometimes whenever it comes to this idea of our faith, it's just like, what's the worst that could happen? What's the risk? And it's like, so I'm going to invite a friend. What's the worst that could happen? It's like, well, they may say no. Well, everybody says no to an invitation they haven't received. So you've already got a no because you haven't asked.
Right.
So what's the worst that could happen? You know, what's the worst that could happen if you say, you know what, I'm going to put my skepticism and my doubts aside, and I'm going to explore this honestly and genuinely. What's the worst that could happen? It's like, well, you confirm every bit of your skepticism. Mm-hmm. Is that really the worst thing? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or on the other hand, you could have your like life completely altered and changed in the most positive and wonderful direction. So what's the worst thing that could happen if you try to lead your family in the faith? You know, it's just like, Oh, they're going to think I've become some, you know, religious freak or something like that. It's like, is that really, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you got to lean into it and just go. And I think that's why, you know, I love the idea of just like, what's your risk?
Yeah.
Take that risk. Just go for it.
And the woman does, and Jesus rewards that faith. And same can be true of us. So let's talk about that. The risk is worth it because Jesus does reward the faith. How so? What's the reward? What does this look like for maybe the daughter, but then for us as well?
You mean him calling her daughter? Or Jairus' daughter, because I don't want to step on Adam's toe.
That's right. You stay away from that. Oh, man. Stay away from that. We got to have something to talk about.
We're sitting across the table from each other.
We're at a point in the Mark and sandwich where we have eaten through 75% of it. And so it's starting to all fall apart and become one part of the, you know.
Cool. So here
which is why sandwiches are dumb.
Oh, my goodness.
No, like.
You're as strong about this as I am about Waffle House. Funny. This is good.
So what if you get a sandwich at Waffle House?
Now, patty melt?
Some of those patty melts are good now.
But that's more of a hamburger, so it's not really.
Okay. No, with a sandwich, though, right, you do want the right bread and the right meat and all of it, because the outside flavors the inside flavors the outside. They all work together, and that's exactly what Mark's doing. But for this, you said, well, how was she rewarded? Well, we already talked about a little bit. She was called daughter. That's the only person Jesus called daughter.
Sure.
And but as I just thought about the question, how was she rewarded? To a certain extent, this might sound cliche, but she got Jesus himself. Like, she didn't just get the healing.
Right.
She was healed physically, but she was also healed spiritually. And there's two different Greek words there. It's basically a hygienic healing. I forget how to say it in Greek right now. But anyway.
Nobody knows out there. Just say it.
Sozo is the Greek word save that we translate your faith has made you well. But you think about it, Jesus took her through some painful healing because she already knew she was risking making people upset. And he just took it another level and made everyone stop and look at her. Mm-hmm. But then what happened on the other side of that was she was completely restored, like we sort of already referenced. And she could go to synagogue again, and not just that she knew it, but the crowd knew it, the whole community knew it. And man, my goodness, that's pretty powerful too. And so in that moment, she didn't just get a distance healing. She got a very personal encounter with Christ himself. And she knew, he called her daughter.
Yeah.
So like that, and Jesus will do the same thing for us. We approach him.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to call you daughter, and he wants to call you son, and it's a very personal encounter. So,
yeah, I love that. One thing that I think we've mentioned it before, I want to give a little bit more commentary to it just to kind of help ourselves. The woman was at a point where she had tried on her own everything that she could think of, right? So she has paid the money on the doctors. She's done whatever she could do to try to find healing, but it kept coming up short. Faith in herself and in others were fading, but Jesus was different.
Mm-hmm.
When faith was placed in him, she wasn't disappointed. And I think that that's just for us. I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but idolatry is a word that comes to mind. Sometimes we place our faith in things that will eventually wear us out. And it will eventually leave us disappointed. Jesus is never that way. So let's just talk through kind of our culture, maybe some things that our people can be encouraged by or challenged with. What are some things that we sometimes tend to place our faith in and then eventually leave disappointed? And how can we shift that faith to Jesus? Maybe with or without the suffering and despair of the woman demonstrated here.
I think that a lot of times where I'm tempted to put my faith in something other than Jesus is generally like in my own abilities, my own giftings, my own capabilities, my personal strengths, and thinking I can do this on my own. I can do this on my own. And I was having a conversation with a guy about this just this past week, just talking about he's kind of in a low spot in his ministry and just wrestling through some things. And so I just kind of went to, well, talk to me about your devotional rhythms. And he's like, well, they're kind of sporadic. There's this going on. And he's like, I really just kind of try to wait until one of those weeks when I'm not preaching so I can refill my cup. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, that's probably a big part of this issue here of where you've got to have those daily rhythms going through to where you're constantly filling the cup, constantly keeping it there, mm-hmm. so that you're always going from the overflow, because that's the shift. Is if not, then what we're doing is we're relying on our own creativity. We're relying on our own charisma, our own ability to captivate and to just lead out of our own strength. And what Jesus is calling us to is himself and saying, no, let me be this. I am your charisma. I am your capability. I am all of these things, and I'm captivating enough. You know, you pointed out at the beginning, one of my favorite things about Jesus is every time he shows up, a crowd shows up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I mean, it shouldn't be too surprising. The guy that said, whenever I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. I mean, it kind of sounds like a crowd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so so that's just who he is. And so it for us, it is just learning to lean into his power. And I think that's, for me, that's what I would say, is my temptation is to lean into my capabilities and my strength and not into the strength of Jesus.
Sure. That's good. I think anybody listening, anybody at this table I know has been tempted that way before and mm-hmm. could be very well likely be tempted that way again.
Yeah, and that's here at the church. That's at my home. That's, you know, mm-hmm. that's everywhere.
Sure. Yeah. Josh, yeah. Anything else to add just kind of on what are some things that we might place our faith in, eventually become disappointed? How do we shift that to faith in Jesus?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'd say I'm a lot the same as Adam. I tend to think of my own ability to perform certain tasks, whether it's a father or a husband or anything like that. Yeah. I think culturally we look to other things, just like relationships, to free us from our suffering if we only had the right one.
Sure.
Or we mm-hmm. look to our, I mean, this is performance again, but our job, like if we make enough money or get enough recognition, those are kind of popular things to go to, of course. But I love Adam, just once again, here's our bingo card coming back to rhythms and what we're talking about. And I wanted to share this. Last week I came across this book called The Common Rule. And as this guy wrote it, talking about just doing that, putting rhythms and habits in your life. And the picture on the front cover is actually the picture of a calendar. But the bottom of it is the calendar is envisioned to be a trellis, which, if you don't know that term, it's like a scaffolding basically for grapevines, because it helps them grow healthy. And so his image is using your calendar not as the enemy, but as a tool to grow your faith and to grow your rhythms. And so to make things regular in your schedule, like meals with other people or kneeling prayer or just all sorts of things, and use your calendar to your advantage and really stick to your rules, quote unquote, not because you're a rule keeper, but because they keep you. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just love that image that the calendar could actually be like, you could flip the script, you know, and use that as a source of health. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to offer that up too.
Yeah, no, those are great insights from both of you. I agree wholeheartedly. And man, the encouragement for us is like, man, at a moment in our lives where we might be kind of placing our faith more in our own ability or in the comfort that we might get from something else, let's shift that towards Jesus, because it's whenever we place our faith in Jesus that we actually experience the healing. And that's the story of this woman with the bleeding issue. And that's the story of really just the gospel. Like this healing that we see here is a gospel message, because yeah. Ephesians chapter 2 says that we're saved by grace through faith. And Romans chapter 6 talks about when we express our faith in baptism, that we are buried with Jesus and that we will certainly experience new life with Jesus. So we'll be healed and experience resurrection. And so there's a lot at stake here. If to use the stake and risk word again, what have you got to lose?
Mm-hmm.
Place your faith in Jesus and roll, man, because it's the best. Roll, pun intended, with the whole, like, you know,
sandwich
dice and stuff like that.
Oh, roll the dice.
I thought you're going back to a sandwich.
Like, roll the stone away.
Roll the stone away. Roll the sandwich.
Yeah, a sandwich is on a roll.
Oh, okay. There you go. I was like, I've never once like taken my.
No, that's called a wrap.
Just, like, rolled it like
that's
that.
Called a wrap.
A wrap.
Yeah.
How do you feel about wraps?
Burritos are good.
Is a burrito a wrap? Bottom line from yesterday: a step toward Jesus is worth the risk, and so the challenge is take one risk. What are some ideas that you have for our people listening right now? What's a risk that they can take this week that might pay off?
Yeah, one of the, I mean, from the sermon, just extend an invite, mm-hmm. lead your family, start praying. And Adam was referencing it earlier, just skeptical, pursue this with honesty.
Mm-hmm.
But here's just kind of another one. This woman's relationships were restored. And so maybe you're listening and you have an estranged relationship with a family member. Husband or a wife, kids, just someone, a coworker, a boss, and maybe you need to take a risk to restore that relationship. Do a lot of praying and stuff first, but take a risk. Put yourself out there. Apologize where you need to, and make it right.
Yeah,
we got to restore our relationships. So
yeah, love that.
I love that. I think one I would throw in, you know, to maybe get even more zeroed in on the lead your family thing. Is this would be more of a challenge to our men and our husbands. And I'll start off with this. What if I could tell you there's one thing that could lower your divorce rate down to 1 in 10,000?
I like those odds.
You like those odds?
I like those odds.
You know what? Roll the dice.
You want to roll the dice?
Yeah.
Do you want to know what it is? Regularly pray out loud together.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome. Yeah.
So husbands, men, dads, you know, I would say this is the risk that you could take. And the reason it's a risk is because it feels incredibly awkward. It can feel weird. We're not for sure what to say, all those things. But what if you would take the risk and just before you fall asleep each night, you just grab your wife's hand and you just say, hey, let's pray together. And it doesn't have to be long. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. You know, it could even be a prayer just as simple as, hey, God, we're having a rough time right now. Can you please give us help? Amen. You know, and do those things. But it's a risk because it feels awkward.
Yeah.
But it's worth the risk.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
To step into.
Yes. 100%. Highly recommend doing that.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
And I'll use a Groeschel line. If you miss one night, just don't miss two.
I missed two. Yep.
Yep. That's good. Very good. Great conversation today. Love the stories from Mark chapter 4 and 5. And we like the story from John chapter 9 as well. Are we are we doing a sandwich with this series?
Ooh.
We're in Mark 4, Mark 5, John 9, middle of the sandwich.
In Mark 5, Mark 5. And then we end in, I think it's Matthew 26. So.
Okay.
It's the side dish.
Which is the pickle.
Yeah, that's just
the
bag of chips.
That's the pickle off
the
to
pickle.
The side.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, John chapter 9 was the sandwich. So. The meat, the substance.
Mm-hmm. Substance.
I don't know. Cool. Good conversation today. We'll end with something fun here. As we're talking right now, we are headed into the weekend of the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 of March Madness. Have you guys been watching any at all?
Barely.
Barely? Barely?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched a little bit.
I've watched the Texas games. That's about it.
Yeah. I watched Missouri get beat by Princeton, so that was fun.
Okay.
Good. But then I it was also really fun to watch Kansas get beat by Arkansas.
So. Yeah.
By like 1 point, I think.
I can't remember what the score on that one.
1 point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Sasha okay?
Yeah. In fact, I walked in later that night, like to the bedroom or whatever. And I was like, hey, I'm sorry. Kansas lost. She's like, what? They lost? She didn't even know the score.
Yeah.
She had seen some other score, but she hadn't seen that one yet. So,
okay.
Yeah.
It's just too bad it had to be Arkansas that won. If there was a way for that game to like end.
Both lose.
With the stadium falling in on itself, that would have been perfect.
It would implode. But,
Man, good stuff. So we're going to play a game. It's called March Mapness. And there are 10 colleges that I have. And I'm going to give you guys three options. and you have to tell me of those three options where that college is actually located. So okay. These are colleges that, you know, like yeah, I'm not going to give you Texas because right. You know that that's located, but other kind of discrete colleges that show up in the March Madness yeah. tournament.
So are we going for like exact city or are we going for state?
You're going just for state.
Are you going to give us the options though?
I'll give you three options. Okay. And
I think for these first couple, don't give us the options. Let's just see.
Don't. Okay. Don't. And
sure. Let's just see.
Okay. Let's try it. Yeah.
And if you can get the city.
Yeah.
Bonus point? I don't know.
Bonus points.
Yeah, we're going to take a risk.
All right, cool.
You're going to give me
no options.
You're going to give me $10 for my sub sandwich for
yeah.
lunch.
It'll get you a 6-inch sandwich. Okay.
And if I win, you can have it.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, we've got our first college is Georgetown.
Okay.
Ooh, Georgetown. Massachusetts.
No, that's in Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. is...
That's like... Oh, Maryland is where D.C. is.
Correct okay. answer. Yeah. So Maryland,
winner.
Washington, D.C. So Adam's on the board.
Beating,
you said that one so confidently. He's like, oh, yeah, Massachusetts.
Just kidding. It's not an M.
All right. Washington, D.C. is correct. That's where Georgetown's at. Should get this one where we live. Clemson.
Clemson? It's in South Carolina.
South Carolina.
South Carolina.
It's Anderson, isn't it? Anderson, South Carolina?
I don't know. I don't have this.
Or no, I think it's like Clemson, South Carolina. Anyway, go ahead.
Clemson. Clemson is in Clemson, South Carolina. Seton Hall.
New Jersey.
Oh. I don't know. Yeah.
Don't know? New Jersey's right.
Yeah.
I may have picked a game that you had no chance.
No, when you're talking about basketball,
yeah,
I'm definitely.
Well, see, the thing is, like these colleges, the discrete ones that make their way into the March Madness tournament, you never see them on the, you know, football field,
right.
Hardly ever.
No.
So Clemson, with maybe the exception yeah. there, but okay, Seton Hall is New Jersey.
Yeah,
Villanova.
Yep, that's Philadelphia.
Sure.
It is Pennsylvania, Philadelphia yep. to be correct. All right.
A lot of these are going to be Northeast.
Okay. Marquette.
Marquette?
Marquette.
Marquette. Let's say New York.
It's Wisconsin.
Wisconsin's correct.
Northeast,
Adam,
right?
Adam has not gotten one wrong.
College basketball, man. Yeah. He knows his stuff.
Rutgers.
I don't know.
New Jersey.
New Jersey's correct. Vanderbilt.
That's Tennessee. I know that.
That's Tennessee.
Boom. Josh is on the board, so it's not a total washout. Xavier.
Ooh. That's up in the Northeast, right?
Is it?
I don't know. Let's go Pennsylvania again for that one.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes, golly, it man. Is. It is Ohio. That's who Texas has tomorrow night.
Is it?
Friday. Yep. Friday night. So, Hook'em Horns. Hoping to grab that dub. Creighton.
Ooh. Can't remember.
Now, this one, I think, is Indiana. It's either Indiana or Nebraska.
It's Nebraska.
Okay.
Nebraska, yeah. Okay, this is the last one.
I actually knew somebody played at Creighton. She's a girl, though.
The last one is Brigham Young.
Oh, that's
BYU.
What, Utah?
Yeah,
Utah.
BYU.
There you go. Okay. So there you go. The game we picked today, Josh had no chance of winning. But that's okay. His faith is not
he took a risk.
In his knowledge of where discrete college basketball teams are located.
Now, you and say so, discrete. If you were going discrete, you would have picked, like, no one knows them. Yeah, like Colgate.
Florida Atlantic.
Like, where's
Florida?
Where's that?
Yeah, where's Florida Atlantic from?
Good time. So this is a fun one that maybe we can do it another time. Do you feel like there is a sport, maybe NFL, NHL, NBA, do you feel like there is a sport where without looking, without helping, without prepping, that you could name all of the teams and all of the cities?
We've done that before in the NFL. I did that once.
You can do all 32?
Because I did it by division. And so once you nail it down, I'm like,
divided into four.
Yeah, it would take me a second.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could do NFL.
I couldn't
you
do
NBA.
No.
I could not do all 300 in NCAA basketball teams.
No. I'm thinking NBA. Could you do MLB? I feel like you might be able to do MLB.
No.
I think so. And I think I could get NBA as well.
Yeah.
I'd be really close.
I've never tried. I feel like I could get NBA, yeah. MLB, and NFL.
Yeah, NHL.
I could not get NHL.
No chance.
I could not.
MLS, yeah. No.
Even MLS or all the other European and South American leagues.
Is that the Major League sandwich?
The Major League sandwich. No, it's something that you hate just as much as sandwiches. Major League
now,
soccer.
Now, see, I like sandwiches. I will make a sandwich at home. I'm just not going to get a sandwich.
What do you put on your sandwich at home? Like if you're
so normally I will use, and so I'm fairly picky about my deli meat. I like boar's head,
mm-hmm.
And so
okay, that's the good stuff.
Give me a turkey and ham, or just turkey, slice of provolone, slice of Swiss, mayonnaise, and I'm good.
Toasted? No mustard?
No mustard. No, not necessarily toasted. I like Killer Dave's bread, though. I don't know if you guys have.
I've had it. It's good.
So,
are you dressing it up with any like lettuce, tomatoes, or anything like that, or is it?
That's too fancy.
I like romaine lettuce.
Romaine, yeah. If I'm building my ideal sandwich, it's gonna take a little bit of bread, a couple of nice little leaves of romaine, mm-hmm. a thin slice of tomato, a couple of thin slices of cucumber, folded in half.
Yeah, you ruined it.
Not a cucumber.
Four to six slices of deli meat, and then a couple of slices of cheese.
Now, if I'm feeling like it's good, like super fancy, it's a hot ham and cheese.
Yeah, those are good.
Like grilled,
like maybe on a roll.
No, no, no. It's still on. It's a grilled cheese with ham and.
Yeah, those are good.
We have a panini press, and we'll do paninis. Yeah, so you can get like a nice pesto. Yeah. With some turkey and
all that stuff's good. I just don't want to go to a restaurant and get a sandwich.
All right, cool. So, Adam, today you can go home and make yourself a sandwich. Mm-hmm. Josh, you want to go to Firehouse?
Sure,
let's go.
You gonna pay?
No. All right. Hey, really, really glad that you joined us for another episode of Corinth in Your Car. We will be back at church on Sunday morning for part number 4 of Corinth in Your Car. Part number 5 of Corinth in Your Car.
No, part number 5 of Healer. That's the name of the series.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Boom. We'll be here regardless. Luke, we will be here on Sunday mornings. And we hope to see you in person for another great week, and then back in your car next Monday for another great episode of Corinth in Your Car. We love you. We like you. Peace and grace. Have a great week.